I get every celebrity with votes around.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Here.
Ms. Simmons.
Here.
Mr. Ford. Dr. Webb.
Here.
Mr. Welsh.
Here.
Mr. Wiesing.
Here.
Mr. Yost.
Here.
Item two, executive session. I accept a motion for executive session.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board convene into executive session to consider the employment of personnel as permitted by Section 2C1 of the Open Meeting Act, collective negotiating matters as permitted by Section 2C2 of the Open Meeting Act, and pending probable and imminent litigation as permitted by Section 2C11 of the Open Meeting Act.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's moved and seconded.
How do we know that's off?
Roll call, please.
Mr. Cradaville.
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Wiesing.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. Welsh.
Yes. Back in open session, under action items, item three on the agenda, I'm adding one additional item to the agenda. Under action items, this will be item F, change in Board of Trustees meeting date. So we have approval of minutes of September 3rd, 2010. Accept a motion for approval.
I'll move. Second.
Second. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mr. Cradaville.
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Wiesing.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. Welsh.
Yes. Under item B, executive session minutes, I believe Mr. Ingram has no suggestion.
Right.
Okay, nothing at this time. Thank you. Item C, purchase approvals, Vice President Weber.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. Today we have one purchase for the board to consider. This is for masonry tuck pointing at Booth Library. This is a project we had hoped to do last year, but because of our cash flow situation, this work was postponed, and now we're hoping to be able to do this work this year. The funding source is appropriated funds, and the recommended vendor is listed as Mason's Masonry Restoration. And we request that the Board of Trustees approve this purchase item.
Is there a motion to that effect?
No move.
Second.
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Roll call.
Mr. Cradaville.
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons.
Yes.
Dr. Webb.
Yes.
Mr. Wiesing.
Yes.
Mr. Yost.
Yes.
Mr. Welsh.
Yes. Item D, out-of-state tuition, Vice President Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Welsh. As the board is aware, we have brought in twice, two different board meetings, requests for some adjustments in out-of-state tuition. The first time had to do with an adjustment that applied to very high-profile undergraduates from anywhere in the United States. We then subsequently came back and asked for an adjustment for undergraduate out-of-state tuition applying to international students, which had a very beneficial effect this year. This latest request is in response to continuing competitive pressures from surrounding states. Western Illinois University and Southern have felt this pressure for some time because the states nearest them have granted favored status. Indiana has started to do the same sorts of things, and we're close to Indiana. So this proposal is to request authorization to provide students, undergraduate students from the five contiguous states, the ability to qualify for in-state tuition level. And that's what this request is about.
Make a motion to approve this.
Is there a second?
Second.
A discussion?
Dr. Lord, are there any state rules and regulations that pertain to tuition charges the university has for out-of-state students?
There are state regulations that apply explicitly to waivers. You know, waivers can be viewed in several ways. One way would be to say that you are taking your stated approved rate and reducing that for some particular student by waiving the tuition. You have to waive from something, and by approving an out-of-state rate that happens to be the same as in-state rate, I don't believe, and apparently the other schools listed here don't believe, that constrains us in any way. But that's really a legal question. Perhaps you should refer that to our attorneys.
No, within certain parameters, the universities across the state have different rates for these types of students.
So the answer is there are no state regulations that
no,
are being
not
violated by this policy?
Not to my knowledge. I do believe that if the IBHE would have input if yeah, they so desired.
Other questions?
What do you think the positive effect will be?
I'm sorry, Don, you broke up a little bit. What was that?
What is your reading? Will this level of playing field competitively to some extent? And what are your thoughts?
I believe this will open up new markets for us, new opportunities to recruit students. We have several opportunities fairly immediately in the St. Louis metropolitan area and more or less along the I-70 corridor into Indiana. I think it has some real opportunities for us to grow our out-of-state tuition, our out-of-state enrollments.
As I understand it, our enrollment was down in terms of new enrollees, so this should help that, obviously.
That is part of the rationale for this, to help continue to allow us to aggressively recruit broadly.
Thank you.
Don, just a comment. There are several universities in border states that have been doing this for some years now, Missouri and Kentucky, Indiana, so this doesn't represent a dramatic departure from what other states are doing or other college and universities.
Thank you. I wholeheartedly support it.
Okay. Is there a motion?
There is, Ray.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Prattville?
Yes.
Ms. Nemmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Wiesing?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes. Item E, personnel action, Vice President Lord.
This is a request for the board to grant a faculty rank to Mr. Robert Michael Watts. I believe you're all aware he's director of our Tarbell Arts Center and has been since 1986. He has participated with the art department for many years, and he has a Master of Fine Arts degree. This was fully supported by the faculty in the Department of Art, in the art department, by the chair of the art department, by three consecutive arts and humanities deans, Dean Johnson, Dean Lynch, and currently Dean Irwin. And so and I support it, and the president did likewise. So this would not grant a tenured line to him, merely the opportunity to use the title as well as director of the Tarbell Arts Center, also assistant professor of art.
Okay. Need a motion?
I'll move.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mr. Prattville?
Yes.
Ms. Nemmons?
Yes.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Wiesing?
I recuse.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes. Item F, change in the board meeting dates. I think Mr. Cradwell has a proposal.
Yeah, I made that request. All the years that we have met, since I've been on the board, the meeting in September was usually the weekend of the Hall of Fame game and the induction of the Hall of Fame members, and I thought that was a great idea. And then when the calendar was presented to us, I just really didn't look at it. I figured it was going to be the same as every year, but it was changed this year, and it was changed to the Labor Day weekend, the second, which I don't think is that great either, but I think from a public relations standpoint, from the standpoint of the board, it's good that we show up for that, we're in town for that, and honoring our Hall of Famers from many cases all over the world, or at least all over the country. So I respectfully make that motion to change it from the 2nd to the 16th of September for this year.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. Hearing none, roll call.
Mr. Cradaville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons?
No.
Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Wiesing?
Yes.
Mr. Yost?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes. Thank you. Moving to informational items, item A, President's Report.
Thank you, Chairperson Welch. Over the past year, we've had an extensive discussion on campus regarding campus master plan update, and we're pleased today to present for your information the campus master plan update as we're recommending it to you. Then in the intervening time between this meeting and the January meeting, you'll have time to study it and consider it, consider what amendments or other kinds of changes you might prefer to have in it, and then in January we would bring a master plan update to you for your approval. I'd like to ask Vice President Weber, who has guided this process over the past year, to make the presentation.
Thank you, President Perry. Let me start off by saying that this is an update to our existing master plan. We focused on certain areas of campus, most notably the possibility of a new science building, and then secondly, what to do with the existing steam plant once it is decommissioned and our new renewable energy center is up and running. We've had many meetings. We've had an excellent steering committee who's considered the issues carefully and thoughtfully. We've also had numerous open sessions, both on campus and off, on campus for faculty, staff, administrators, off campus for the community. With us today, we have Steve Schrake, who's our Associate Director for Design and Construction, and Steve has been leading the effort on behalf of Facilities Planning and Management. We also have today with us Brandon Lippman, who is a principal with Global Schlossman and Hackel, who served as our consultant for this update to the master plan. And if I could ask Brandon to handle the presentation of the PowerPoint and share with you the thoughts on how to update our existing campus master plan.
Good afternoon. The master plan has been taking place over the last year, as Bill and President Perry mentioned, and it involved many things. One of the most important things that it involved was a programming process with 41 departments that were involved in being moved or relocated or expanded in the master plan. And so we're not going to go over the detail of that programming. Inserted in the back of the interim report that you all have is a sort of an executive summary of that programming and staff movement process. I think we had close to 60 or 70 meetings over the course of the programming, so that was a lion's share of the steering committee and faculty work on this. In any case, I'm going to make this as brief and simple as possible as we go through it, but please do interrupt if you have any questions. We began by looking at the campus after programming and looking at the amount of green space you have on campus. I will mention that incorporated into this is the ratio architect's landscape plan, by the way, just as an aside. So that is incorporated into this plan. So as far as green space goes, we also did some comparisons to other universities. This is considered a moderately dense campus. It's a beautiful example, as you all know, of traditional landscaping and traditional college buildings. And as the diagram shows, you have a lot of green space and very valuable green space. We also did a parking lot analysis. It was decided as a driver of this process that parking would not be expanded but would be replaced in kind with any facility development that would occur over the next, I guess this is a 15-year vision into the future. In looking at the plan, just to orient everybody, north is up, and this is Old Main, top. Part of the process was to understand what the imperatives were, and as Bill mentioned, the science building is imperative number one, followed by the considerations of the steam plant and what to do with student services as well. So part of the process that you'll have in the appendix eventually is the selection of sites on campus. We spent considerable amount of time discussing and debating what sites on campus were viable for expansion or building on. In the end, it was decided that two sites were. One is the site adjacent to the steam plant, and one is the Tundra site. The first site will be expanded eventually in this master plan vision. Whoops. It's going a little too quickly. Maybe it's a hint. In any case, the steam plant site will become home to student services and IT services. And the Tundra was decided to become the site of the science building. What's happening here? Okay, in any case, part of the process was also the migration of departments. This diagram, if you take the time to look at it when you have these booklets for consideration, the diagram on the left shows the current department distribution, and the one on the right shows the future consideration of distribution of departments. And Bill, you want to say a word about that?
Sure, I'd be glad to. The new science building, which is located south of the Tarble, would house biological sciences and chemistry. With biological sciences moving out of the life science building, we envision having economics and political science moving out of Coleman into that building, along with the math and computer science department moving out of Old Main into the old life science building. We also envision tearing down the annex to the life science building to create some more green space there. With chemistry moving into the new science building, that will free up space in the physical sciences building for expansion of the existing departments there, physics, psychology, and geology, geography. And at least at this point, we also envision having the nursing program move into that building. With McAfee, nursing moving out of there, along with some administrative functions moving out of there, in particular CATS, that would allow expansion for health studies and kinesiology and sports studies. The vision for the student services building is to renovate the existing steam plant and add an addition to it so that we would have essentially a one-stop shop for student services. So some student services would be moving out of Old Main, out of the student services building, and into this new building. One very nice feature of doing this is we envision the existing student services building being torn down. And again, the departments in that area moving into the renovated steam plant and addition. That, in besides student services, I should mention, would also include the IT areas, both information technology services, which is now in SSB, and CATS, the Center for Academic Technology Support, which right now is in McAfee. By getting rid of the student services building, we have a very nice expansion of the North Quad. with the expansion of the student of the steam plant, giving a nice defining east edge to the north quad and extending that green space downwards. On the diagram, you'll see circles on a lot of the buildings. Those circles are indicating buildings with classroom space, and in particular, we would continue to maintain classroom space in Old Main along with the other academic buildings. Brandon?
Thank you, Bill. As part of the landscape plan, Ratio Architects, landscape architects, were also involved, and their strategy was for all future landscape development to both consider and extend traditional speciation of landscape, and also for new landscape to be quite sustainable in its design and species selection. So this is an overview of that on campus. In particular, given the potential shape of a new science building, to develop the way from residential and Greek areas over on this side of campus, develop a sustainable outdoor classroom space that would relate to the science building which it fronts on this diagonal that extends over to the node in this location, and support that beautiful bald cypress way to the south of Tarbell. Part of the master plan process also analyzed the utilities on campus and which utilities would need to be extended and of course all the costs of that. And it also entertained not only the addition of the science building and student services, but extending chilled water for Blair Hall and Pemberton as well. So those are part of the master plan at this point. I will say that campus has done an excellent job on utility management. It's one of the best we've seen. So as an overview, looking at the campus, looking towards the northwest, a new science building site on the tundra, new student services and renovated steam plant, and then you can see the campus athletic plan. The incentive for sustainability in landscape and building technologies cannot be overstated. That should be one of the drivers of this master plan. Different view looking southeast, same sites, science building, and then again on the main quad, in addition to the steam plant and renovation of the steam plant. Closer view of the science building, showing, of course, this is a master plan, but this is blocked up to a 75,000 square foot new science building with chemistry and biology, which was the gross programming that was done on this building. We masked it and looked at the site with an eye towards getting as close to a maximum sustainability with the science building as you could, capitalizing on what will be available solar technologies when this is realized, capitalizing on southern exposure for maximizing both passive and solar greenhouses integral into the southern part of the building, et cetera, and supporting a really nice pedestrian way, green roofs, but as sustainable a building as you possibly could achieve, which I think should be the mission of any science building in this day and age, and I think the steering committee was on board with that. Another view of the science building, looking northeast. Should mention that the parking lot to the south, Rachel was looking at all kinds of sustainability possibilities for that in permeable paver systems, increasing green space, but also any parking that we would displace would be taken up. There are tennis courts here now, and we're finding another place for those tennis courts for the future. A little bit of detail on the sustainable landscape, living landscapes. The palettes are native-based landscape, which is what Ratio would like to see the campus move towards. And here's a view of the student center, again, supporting the main quad and extending it down to where greened parking and service areas could be developed to the north of the Union. Another view of the quad with a supported east edge. overview of some detail of landscaping again. These incorporate some areas which are now being done and are part of previous landscape efforts, which are now incorporating the master plan. Pedestrian cafe outdoor areas around the Union. But again, here is the addition to the steam plant and the steam plant and continuing the traditional and beautiful, I might add, landscaping of the main quad. At the end of this executive summary, you will see a cost estimate, which is a gross cost estimate of all the elements of the 15-year master plan. So any questions about that, you direct to Bill. And that's about it. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Perry, I have a question you might be able to give me some insight on. This is a plan, obviously. It has to be implemented. So with the plan that was presented, you have, let's say, three priorities as to what you would choose to implement.
Well, the first priority is the science building, and as you know, the students approved a fee increase for their campus improvement fee last year. It stair steps up, and in the stair step phase, those dollars are being used in real time for renovations to the physical sciences building and the biological sciences buildings. Then at the end of that four-year stair step period, the fee increase will have a total $10 a semester credit hour. Given our semester credit hour generation, that should generate $3 million a year, which can finance, under normal circumstances, $30 million worth of construction. So that is a feasible project for us. We're going to continue to seek funds for that through the campaign for Eastern. Also, obviously still approaching the state and then also federal sources. The number two priority is to, of course, that creates space, as was mentioned in the presentation, creates much needed space as we start to move, or the departmental migration takes place, much needed space in Coleman, for example. Embedded in all those migrations are priorities with regard to space to support the faculty, as well as the some of the centers, the Center for Humanities, for example, which is one of our priorities in the campaign. So I would say science building, space for new faculty, and then the third would be a new space for the faculty, and then the third would be pulling our student services together in one place.
Thank you. Any questions from the board?
Do I understand there is a time table and a cost estimates in here in this report?
Certainly cost estimates. A timetable is much more flexible, so I don't think there's a specific timetable listed.
There is not one at this point.
I'm not aware of one.
There are some timetables, Trustee Webb. For example, as Textbook Library has now moved out of Pemberton Hall Gym, we're in the design phase now. We will be able to begin work by next fall to create the space for the Honors College, which will move across the street from Booth House. Also, we will have some all-purpose space there, which we can use if faculty or classroom space needs to be created in by virtue of the renovations that are going to be going on in the physical science or biological sciences building. When that project is complete, by then, the old steam plant will be decommissioned, and we can begin the design work for that. I believe that by the time you get 4 years out, we will have completed those two projects. Now, that does not mean we will have created the addition to the old steam plant to pull everything together for student services. Earliest we would put a shovel in the ground for the science building would be 4 years from now. And the extent of the design and construction for that would depend upon how much money we had raised in addition to what the students have financed. So it is a long-range plan. Also, many of the elements of the landscape plan, we'll have to develop funding for those as well.
Any other questions? Thank you. Under my report,
For my second item, I bring information about faculty achievement. It has been our practice, certainly since I've been president, to showcase faculty achievement in the board meetings. And faculty recognition comes in many forms. And one is that institutions are asked to join scholarly consortia, and those that are the membership of which is by invitation are especially meaningful because they do have limited membership. Now, we have faculty with recognized expertise in Renaissance studies, and that faculty spans many, many departments and colleges on the campus. And this faculty has recently, by invitation, been asked to join the Newberry Library Renaissance Studies Consortium, which is limited to 50 universities, at least in North America. And so we wanted you to hear this good news today, so we have a presentation for you, and I'll turn the microphone over to Provost Lord.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm actually going to turn it over very immediately to Dean Bonnie Irwin, who will set the context for this initiative, and she will then turn it over to Professor Julie Campbell, who's leading our efforts with this initiative. Dean Irwin.
Last year, you heard presentations from all four colleges about interdisciplinary centers that we'd like to have here at EIU. And the purpose of the Center for Translational Humanities is to raise the profile of the humanities on campus, to put it on a par with the great strides we've made in the arts. And the idea here is to bring faculty together, bring in speakers from the outside, and do a number of things. We have applied for a grant that we'll hear about in December, but in consultation with Dr. Anita Shelton, who you heard from last year, and Dean Jeff Lynch, I decided to try to get started, at least in a modest way. And so one of the first things I did was I appointed Dr. Janet Marquardt, who's a professor of art history, to be the director of the center, and she's with us here today. I just wanted you to meet her. And because we are trying to elevate the humanities, we have then established a partnership with the Newberry Library. And Dr. Julie Campbell from the English Department is here to tell you just a little bit about that.
Hello, I'm Julie Campbell from English. In August, Dr. Carla Zecker, director of the Center for Renaissance Studies at the Newberry Library in Chicago, invited EIU to join their Renaissance Studies Consortium. As Dr. Perry said, this is an international group limited to 50 colleges and universities whose membership both supports the center itself and provides travel grants for research and participation in the programming of the center at the Newberry, as well as the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. This opportunity provides EIU faculty, students, and graduate students involved in areas of study from the medieval period through 1800. The title Renaissance Center is a little misleading. They actually cover a very broad swath of early studies. Anyway, students who are involved with from the medieval period through the 1800s, access to the excellent collections and programming available there. When presented with the possibility of joining the consortium, some 10 EIU Arts and Humanities faculty responded with letters of support, and I wanted to share with you some of their responses when we received this opportunity. Professors Bailey Young from History and David Rabin from English immediately noted the opportunities this membership would provide for those involved in both the Medieval Studies minor and the new Center for Translational Humanities. Professor Melissa Caldwell from English pointed out that being in close proximity to one of the most important research libraries in the United States offers Eastern a rare opportunity for research and education in the areas covered by this consortium. She noted that it offers us, quote, ways to strengthen the work and sophistication of our graduate students, our very best honor students, and our minor program in medieval studies. Professor Luminita Florea from Music noted that she had attended one of the Newberry Library Summer Institutes, and that experience was one of the most enlightening learning experiences of her life, not to put it too finely. The EIU Newberry Liaison Committee now consists of myself as chair, and my committee members are Charles Foy from History and Luminita Florea from the Music Department. So you may be familiar with the Newberry Library, or you may not be. So I wanted to say a word about what exactly is the Newberry Library. It's an independent research library concentrating in the humanities. It houses an enormous, non-circulating collection of rare books, maps, music, manuscripts, and other printed material. Moreover, it offers extensive programming in the way of lectures, seminars, institutes, and teacher training programs based on its collections and facilitated by leading scholars in their fields. Within the Newberry itself lies the Center for Renaissance Studies. And although Newberry programming is technically open to the public, their higher education programming, their seminars and workshops, have limited enrollment and preferences always given to their consortium members. Spaces are held for these members. In the recent past, at least three EIU faculty members have been invited to give lectures at the Newberry, and we have. But technically, since we were not consortium members, few, if any, of our colleagues and our students could have been accommodated in those sessions with us because of preference given to consortium members. As EIU's presence in the region has increased in visibility through the work of our faculty scholars and with the advent of our Center for the Translational Humanities, our connections with the Newberry Library have increased, thus precipitating the invitation to actually join the consortium. The first opportunity to take advantage of our new membership occurred on October 30th, when Dr. Melissa Caldwell and a student from her English graduate course on 17th century literature attended the 25th annual Newberry Library Milton Seminar. This was directed by Christopher Kendrick of Loyola, David Lowenstein of University of Wisconsin-Madison, Helen Marlborough of DePaul, and Regina Swartz of Northwestern. Dr. Caldwell reported that the seminar was excellent and that her graduate student was very impressed with his experience. She now plans to include relevant Newberry programming in her upcoming syllabi for other classes. We have more professors scheduled to attend events there coming up soon. Professor Newton Key has signed up for the Anglo-Muslim Seminar. Professor Markhart will attend the Mediterranean Medieval Art Symposium. We have a handout for you that lists some examples of the kinds of opportunities that we can now take part in through our travel grants. If you have any questions about the Newberry or the programming or our participation, I would be happy to try to answer your questions. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and that concludes my report.
Okay, under my report as board chair, I've been following the meetings of the Higher Education Finance Study Commission, and the essentially the final draft report has been released. I did a selected summary of some of the findings that I distributed to the members of the board this morning. And in looking at the structure of the commission, I counted that seven faculty were on the commission, either from the Illinois Board of Higher Education or appointed to the commission, which included Dr. Charles Delman of Eastern Illinois University. So I'd like to thank Dr. Delman for his service on this commission. The draft report, which was issued, was like approximately 40 pages long with a significant amount of information included. But I do want to comment on at least one aspect of the report. I think it's worth repeating. And that is, according to the Delta Cost Product Project, Illinois is an efficient state in terms of resources spent for degree and certification and completion. Based on comparison of degrees and certificates awarded per full-time equivalent student and total funding of the FTE student, Illinois produces more credentials at a lower cost than the national average. Based on a comparison of total education-related spending per degree and certificate completed, Illinois produces more credentials at a lower cost than the national average across all three sectors, including the public research universities, public masters, and community colleges. I think this particular component of the report is worth repeating, and I think it should be and hopefully widely publicized that the higher education system in Illinois has been doing a good job at a comparatively low cost. And I don't think that message has been out there as it should be. We've heard a lot of other messages about higher education, but that's not the one that I've seen, certainly in the public arena. So this particular draft is still available for comment. I suggest that if you wish to access it, you may do so, obviously. And comments are still going to be received by the Board of Higher Education. I believe this report is due to be issued to the General Assembly in early December, if I recall. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. We'll move now to committee reports. And this brings up the executive and planning session that we had earlier this morning. It's a full agenda. We had the NCAA reaccreditation visit report from Dr. Nadler, a strategic planning update by Dr. Weber, and I think you indicated that there has not been a strategic plan at Eastern since the mid-90s. Is that something along the...
Well, there's certainly been planning since that time, but the mid-90s was the last time we undertook a full-fledged...
Yes, that's what I'm referring to. Okay. We had a budget update from Dr. Weber, a campaign for Eastern, Mr. Martin, and it's the campaign is doing well towards its goal, and I think Ms. Nimmons and Mr. Martin to be congratulated for your effort on the behalf of Eastern. The BHE Funding Commission was also discussed, and the National Survey for Student Engagement by Dr. Lord with various and sundry reports from this student engagement. Dr. Markley went over some of the priorities for Eastern as far as legislative agenda for the spring, and the university borrowing bill. Also a federal update from Mr. Martin. So it was a full agenda, and I think we actually did finish on time, so surprise. This moves us to board relations, Ms. Nimmons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've had a good meeting, although we did miss Mr. Yost this morning. As it relates to the campaign, I just want to express sincere appreciation for the tremendous amount of cooperation that the External Steering Committee received from virtually any aspect of the campus that we asked for help. In particular, the facilities management staff really helped. They did it all. They just were amazing in the work that they did in really turning a beautiful gym into an exceptional dinner venue on that Friday night. So thank you so much. Additionally, I can't say enough for the work that Carla Evans and her staff did, as well as the work Bob Martin has done in leading this capital campaign, and it is an absolute privilege to be a part of it, and I believe things will continue to go well. They're going well now, and it's because of the good direction from Mr. Martin and Ms. Evans. We did review a number of other items. A considerable amount of work continues to be done with the alumni's relationships being built, and Steve Rich is to be congratulated for the outstanding work that is being done in that respect. As it relates to the campaign, we are now moving into the regional aspect of the campaign, and that will kick off in less than a month in the Chicago area. We are also very pleased to have a wonderful relationship with the EIU Foundation. Tremendous work is being done there. And we reviewed the donor recognition update, foundation awards, and new members of the foundation board. And we appreciate the leadership that Patty is giving, so thank you so much. And then we got a chance to get some additional information concerning Facebook utilization, the campaign website, and a little bit of work being done as it relates to more promotion of the Science Center. And so with that, I close. Thank you.
I believe the goal of the campaign is $50 million. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. $50 million.
Are you optimistic at this point, this stage in the program?
We are optimistic. I think there has been some wonderful gifts, a lot of plan giving that is coming along. I think as we move forward, we'll be looking to involve gifts that maybe we still have some very large gifts that we're going after. But the relationship that we want to build and to involve a lot of people, even on the smaller level, I think is going to be important as we look towards campaigns of the future, really building those relationships.
This is a larger goal by far than universities ever had on a fundraising campaign, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In fact, it's the first comprehensive campaign that the university has undergone. We have the leadership in place to do that.
Any other questions? Thank you. Finance Audit Committee. Dr. Webb.
We spent time with Sherry McRaven, who is the university's internal auditor. It's not a large staff. Sherry is a single employee of that department, but the amount of work that she performs is a little short of amazing to me. The procedure is to go to various departments in the university and conduct internal audits and then issue reports as to recommendations for any changes. The president volunteered his office to be first, and it says here that his office was cleared. So that's encouraging news. At any rate, I was very impressed with the work that's being done, internal audits, and it should give us the feeling that our procedures and processes are in line with all the rules and regulations.
Okay. Under academic and student affairs, the meeting this morning, I presented to the members of the committee a report that was generated by the Illinois Community College System. It's a compilation on various and sundry institutions that are offering dual credit, including the total number of students over about a four-year period, and the potential impact on the receiving institutions, Eastern Illinois included, involving the dual credit issue, including issues, or to me, revolving around the academic integrity. This is the fairly comprehensive
report, and you may have to take some time to read through all the data that has been compiled, but I think it's the best summary of this particular initiative that's been put forward, excuse me, by the community college system. We also got updates on the teacher accreditation, the textbook rental service, faculty development issues, the new shuttle bus operation, student community service. So that also was a full agenda. And I think that completes the committee reports. So this takes us to item D, earned degrees report. Mr. President, Lord.
The earned degree report is an annual report. I think it's relatively self-explanatory. You'll note that the number of degrees awarded last year was down just very slightly from last year, which was an all-time record year. We again list the top majors. This list is essentially unchanged from prior years as well. The largest majors continue to be our largest majors, and they are listed here on page 10. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Again, I think it's relatively self-explanatory as a data report.
Any questions or comments? Okay. Moving now to item E, the Alumni Association report, Mr. Gary Miller, President of the EIU Alumni Association.
Thank you. I told Bob I thought I could get this in less than 45 minutes. We'll see if we can work that out. My name is Gary Miller. I'm a 1973 graduate of Eastern. In education, I recently finished my 32-year career at Williamsville High School, where I taught high school science and coached football. I currently sit on the board of the Illinois Education Association in Springfield, the National Education Association in Washington, D.C., and I occupy my time now as an adjunct faculty member for the University of Illinois at Springfield and National Lewis University, where I'm working in teacher education programs. I would like to start out with a quick look at the web page for the Alumni Association, just to give you an idea. And many of the questions that you have may be answered here, but I would like to point out just a couple of things briefly before we get into our formal report. And I want to just slide down here and, oops, I'm sorry. What I wanted to do was to go to the About Us page. Now we'll slide down. And basically, I know it may be difficult for some of you in the room to read this, but this is where you can find the members of the Alumni Association and the Executive Committee, but most importantly, our staff, and ably headed by our Executive Director, Steve Rich, who's present here today. And also I would point out, as we go back, that on the side here, I'm going to be talking very briefly about some of the awards that we present, and it's very simple to get to these awards, and we're always seeking nominations, as we'll talk about in just a few minutes. So without further ado, let's see if we can't get going here. Okay. Founded in 1905, there are 21 volunteer board members that govern the association and manage nearly $2.1 million in assets, and these assets include investments in real estate. We regularly communicate with Trustee Roger Cradeville, Roger, and who's our liaison with the board here, and of course Vice President Martin and President Perry, to ensure that we are supporting Eastern's needs. The Alumni Association serves to assist the university's Alumni Services Office with alumni receptions and reunions. We try to hold 35 to 40 events annually, and we've held 17 to date this year, including one in Chicago last night in conjunction with the basketball game. And these have been attended by nearly 1,500 alumni and guests. In addition to the activities associated with homecoming in October, The staff also worked with the Minority Affairs Office to host the Black Student Reunion. More than 300 alumni and guests registered for the event held on campus, and nearly 500 people attended some of the events held during the weekend. Staff is currently working with the university's housing office to coordinate a 2011 reunion for all alumni who worked in housing as a resident assistant, resident director, etc. We continue to publish the Alumni Association magazine, Eastern Illinois Alumni, twice annually. The current issue is being sent to all alumni, and this totals more than 84,000 households, rather than only members of the association, and includes a feature on the university's capital campaign. We're actively trying to reach all of our alumni. Some of you were in attendance for the Alumni Awards dinner that we had in conjunction with Homecoming. We honored 9 alumni during the Homecoming weekend with the Alumni Awards, 6 Distinguished Alumni, 1 Alumni Service Award, 1 Distinguished Educator, 1 Outstanding Young Alumna, and we appreciate that several members of the Board of Trustees were able to join us for the event. I think everybody recognizes Sean Payton down here in the far left corner. The association also selects recipients of the Livingston C. Lord Scholarship each year. This is the oldest and most prestigious scholarship offered to our students and the only one recognized at a commencement each year. Awarded since the 1930s, the association utilized these scholarship funds to create a permanent endowment when the EIU Foundation was first established more than 50 years ago. This year, 5 scholarships of nearly $6,700 each were awarded to students planning a career in K-12. The association has an annual budget of more than $150,000 and strives to support various programs and projects on campus while also assisting with the funding of various alumni activities. Among these areas receiving support in the past year are WEIU, Tarbell Arts Center, Panther Athletics, Student Life, the Study Abroad Program, and various academic departments. And I think this slide was out of place, so I'll just go on to the next one. As you can see, Brainerd and Linderhouses are located on 4th Street, are owned by the association. And an increase in staff size and responsibilities over the years have stretched the faculty's limits, as you can see. At present, the Board of Directors for the Alumni Association is considering the construction of a new alumni facility to house the university's alumni services staff and allow for the hosting of various alumni reception and activities. And I will leave you with this slide, which is an engineer's conception of something we would like to do. I want to emphasize that this is a long-term plan, and this is not part of the campaign. And this is our vision for the future from the Alumni Association. We feel that the properties there are located ideally, and as we strive to make Eastern Illinois the university that we want it to be, this is what the Alumni Association is focused on right now. So with that, I would take any questions that I can answer, which are probably very few. Roger?
Gary, I've attended almost every alumni dinner that we've had since I've been on the board, and pretty much know who Sean Payton is and some of the other well-known people in television or movies. But what I'm always impressed with is seeing the distinguished alumni that are there who are not well-known, who have worked in the jungle someplace treating the sick and have gone all over the world. And to me, those people are really distinguished alumni, too, because they've done this. And also, I might just say that every person that is a student in the past and every person who is a student right now has the opportunity to be a distinguished alumni by what they do with their life when they leave here.
And I thank you for bringing that up, Roger, because it's really incumbent upon all of us. We all know individuals who are in the field. And that's why I pointed out the webpage ahead of time. If you'll just click on awards, you'll see that there are a substantial number of categories. And it's up to us. I mean, I would think that most of us would not nominate ourselves, but I know that everybody sitting in this room knows of at least a few outstanding alumni, and we would encourage you to nominate them. We don't have a formal nominating process, but I mean, we don't have a form as such, and I've worked on the committees as we sort through these excellent resumes. But I would encourage all of you to get out there and you know better than we do. And as an alumni association, you know, we sometimes, I feel like we're blind because we know our inner circle, but it's incumbent upon all of us as university ambassadors. Thank you.
I would just like to reiterate Roger's comments about the award ceremony. I think it's one of my favorite events on campus. It's very inspiring to listen to the success stories. And also, I'd like to thank you for the hard work you're doing and the association. It's very much appreciated.
Well, I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would be remiss if we didn't focus on the staff who are, during homecoming weekend, are overwhelmed, and I think Steve would be the first to tell you that this just doesn't happen by itself. We have a terrific staff, and I want to thank all of you for the honor of speaking with you.
Thank you. Item F, summer fall enrollment reports. Vice President Ward.
Once again, this is an annual report, statistical data on summer enrollments as well as our fall enrollment. It shows essentially what we've been reporting to you right straight along, the enrollment figures for fall. Total headcounts grew for a number of years, and they've been in a slight decline period since, and it shows the figure we reported this fall down a bit from last fall. And it gives some other statistical information regarding the distribution of our students across the various categories, their year at the institution, and as well as their national origin. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Again, I believe it's relatively self-explanatory as presented as a data report.
Questions? Thank you. Item G, reports from constituencies, Faculty Senate, Mr. Palmier, Dr. Palmier.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here. And just want to give a report in regards to Faculty Senate. We've been quite busy this past fall. One of the things I'd like to highlight is probably the reason why I'm here is discuss a forum that we did have on October 7th, and which it was funded and supported by the Faculty Senate as well as UPI, co-sponsored, and it was funding public higher education, who pays and how. We had three distinguished guests that were provided input for this forum. We had Walter McMahon, a professor emeritus at University of Illinois, Champaign. He's also written some textbooks that's highly perceived in the field. We had Charles Delman, which everybody, we've identified already earlier that he's on the State Higher Education Finance Commission, and then Derek Markley. From this forum, again, it was for educational purposes, we had a stronger vision to actually develop some kind of a resolution. And this resolution we were hoping to forward so that it would be reflected by the State of Higher Education Finance Commission. And after that forum, we did do so, developed a resolution, and we forwarded it to the President, yourself as a courtesy, IBHE, the Commission, as well as the Council of Illinois University Senates. And I think that was in your packet for today.
Yes, it was.
And with that, I didn't know if you had any questions in regards to the resolution that was forwarded.
Have you received any responses from any of these organizations you mailed this resolution to?
I did. I spoke to the Council of Illinois Senates, University Senates, this past Friday. They were quite impressed as towards the motion of having a voice forwarded to this commission regards to having a strong message towards what is public education. They discussed that about a year ago as towards what can we do, and they were talking about develop some kind of report as towards the impact of higher education regards to Illinois. And then that led to further discussions. And one thing that I would like to accolade is that they're quite impressed towards how Eastern is efficient with the resources, and we started pointing at a few things that we're doing on given campus, and to have some faculty senate chairs take notes was quite impressive, and they were writing as quickly as they possibly could. But they liked the initiative that Eastern did take, and for us to be hopefully one of the leaders is towards providing this voice.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Student government, Aaron?
Michelle apologizes she cannot be here. She's on a current brief leave of absence from student government due to some health issues. So she's going to try to finish out her semester strongly academically and be back next meeting. Currently, we have elections coming up for student government on December 6th and 7th. We're trying to fill up to 20 seats on student government, so it should be a pretty big election. We've been keeping very active in our meetings with this very week's meeting lasting nearly 4 hours. And we welcome you to visit our new website that has just been put up and should be completed by this weekend. Panther Nation had its wrap-up and kickoff meeting recently and was a great success. And we are moving now into the basketball season, so hopefully we get the students back out for that. And finally, she wanted me to pass on a quick story, that as she always wraps up with a story. She was grabbing a cup of coffee today before heading into her office, and a girl came up to her and said, "I parked in a spot that was reserved for the Board of Trustees party today." So if she was misinformed and there is in fact a party, let me know. I will text her, and she will bring the party hats. So have a happy Thanksgiving. Michelle Murphy. With that, I yield.
Thank you. Summary of purchases, Vice President Weber.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairperson. On page 15 of your packet is the summary of purchases ranging $100,000 to $249,999. There were three such purchases since the last report to the board. As you can tell from the first two of those purchases, we are continuing our efforts to expand wireless access to the internet across campus, as well as improving the instructional technology available in the classrooms.
FY 2011 deposit investment report, Vice President Weber.
Thank you. This is on pages 16 and continuing in your packet. Not much has changed since the last investment report. I will point out at the top of page 17 that we are pleased with the investment returns for the endowment funds. For the quarter ending September 30th, we saw a better than 10% return on investments for that quarter. So that is one encouraging piece of news we have in this part of the report.
Okay, and then FY 2010 income producing contracts.
Yes, this is a lengthy list of the income producing contracts starting on page 18 of your booklet. There are again many, many of these, some from the grants and research area, some from other areas on campus. I thought I would highlight three of these for the board. Just to point out some of the excellent work that's going on page 19, I'll call your attention to item number 7, our TRIO grant for student support services. This is thanks to the fine work of Dr. Davenport and Maggie Burkhead in Minority Affairs. Our TRIO grant was recently renewed for another 5 years, and we're very glad to see that support for first-generation and low-income students. On page 20, I'll point out to you item 18, grant to Professor David Rabin from the English Department, this grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities for Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. And this was part of public service to direct a 4-week summer seminar for the National Endowment for the Humanities. So this was a very nice 6-figure grant, and again, continuing a lot of the fine work that goes on in the humanities. And then finally, I'll call your attention to item 25 on page 21 of your booklet. This was a grant from Edgar County for faculty in the Geology Geography Department. As you browse through these income-producing contracts, you'll find several grants related to GIS, Geographic Information Systems, and GPS, Global Positioning Systems. And this grant is just one of several from that department, and they're continuing their fine work in GPS and GIS. We'd be glad to answer any questions the board may have on any of these income-producing contracts.
Questions? Then we move to University Highlights. Any comments regarding University Highlights?
Yes, Mr. Chairperson and members of the board, you have many University Highlights listed in your booklet. I would point out the items on the kickoff of the campaign for Eastern. Also, the visit from Dr. Linda Birnbaum, who's director of the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences and a member of the Institute of Medicine, who had a very good visit here. And then WIU students have earned another Mid-America Emmy. Many of our student groups do receive recognition of that type, competitive recognition. And also, Dr. Meyer Izadi has been named the interim dean of the Lumpkin College of Business and Applied Sciences. So those are three of the highlights I would bring to your attention.
Thank you. Any other matters for the board? Then we move to public comment. Dr. Allison.
Good afternoon. My name is John Allison, professor of English and president of Eastern's chapter of University Professionals of Illinois. Chairperson Welch, other members of the board, thank you for this opportunity for me and three of my colleagues to address the board. As you know, UPI is currently in contract negotiations here at Eastern Illinois University. We began, I think, around mid-June. It's now past mid-November, so as obviously about 6 months have gone by. I'm confident that all of us agree that a speedy and fair resolution of contract negotiations will be beneficial to the entire campus community, all constituencies, and even the surrounding community. One of the reasons we're here is to urge as a speedy and fair a resolution to contract negotiation discussions as possible. As we are in mediation, our team agreed to 8 mediation sessions out of the 10 the mediator had to offer, and the administration team agreed to 2 of those. We believe that we can make more rapid progress than just 2 meetings would provide. Additionally, we are here because we are aware that, as it is the case in every contract negotiation period, the issues are somewhat abstract and removed as we talk about them in and of themselves. But the fact is that the end result of negotiations impacts the lives of real people, of individuals in their livelihoods, their workloads, their working conditions, which are, of course, the subjects of bargaining, at least the mandatory ones. There are others that are permissible, of course. So I've asked, and I'm pleased that you have granted my request, for 3 of my colleagues to have an opportunity to address you. They are colleagues who, like all of us within the bargaining unit, academic support professionals, annually contracted faculty, tenure-track faculty, who devote their working lives, professional lives, to ensuring that EIU will be the best possible university it can be. And so I would like to introduce annually contracted faculty member Lynn Ann Page. After Lynn Ann speaks, academic support professional Laura Green, and finally Dr. Fern Corey, professor of English and a former professor laureate here at Eastern. So Lynn Ann, you're going to switch it on me. Okay, I think that's quite all right. Laura?
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, President Perry and Chairman Welch, for the opportunity to speak today. Although I can't say this is a lot of fun to speak here today, it is a pleasure to represent the academic support professionals, the group we typically call ASPs. I'm an academic advisor in the Academic Advising Center, and I've been here in that capacity since 1981. I've been an active member of UPI for most of those years. In fact, I served on three negotiations teams, the earliest one being in 1995, when we individualized our contract as a result of no longer being under the Board of Governors umbrella. I have a long history at Eastern, and I will talk about that in a minute, but first I want to expand a little bit on just exactly who we ASPs are and why we should be recognized as a valuable asset to Eastern Illinois University. The academic support professionals do just what the name implies. We academically support the mission and goals of EIU through our work with students, faculty, and administration. We're a small, very diverse group, but we share a common focus, which is the academic success of students. We serve in permanent, full-time positions with titles such as academic advisor, counselor, admissions counselor, faculty assistant, and curator. Most of us have a master's degree, many of us have extra hours beyond our degree, and some even have multiple graduate degrees. ASPs are found in the various colleges: College of Arts and Humanities, Education Professional Studies, the Lumpkin College of Business and Applied Sciences, the College of Sciences, the School of Continuing Education, Graduate School, and the Honors College. ASPs are also sprinkled throughout a variety of departments on campus, such as Admissions, Office of the Registrar, Minority Affairs, the Counseling Center, the Academic Advising Center, and Tribal Arts Center. It is the ASPs who typically make the first contact with new students. Our admissions and transfer relation folks recruit students and introduce EIU to many, many people. Once the students are recruited and admitted, we academic advisors are the next in line to meet with these students. We work with them to identify their academic goals, plan course of study while they are here at EIU. We consult with faculty and administrators daily, rely heavily on the records office personnel and certifying officers in order to guide these students through to a timely degree. As one of my former colleagues from the Academic Advising Center used to say, I teach, but I just teach one at a time. Some of our ASPs actually teach classes, such as University Foundations or maybe a technology class for the education majors, although teaching is not our primary duty. Another type of ASP is the counselor in the Counseling Center. The counselors in this area are professionally trained to guide students through both personal and academic development. Yet another type of ASP is the faculty assistant. These people prepare, take down laboratories for faculty who teach in the science areas. Some faculty assistants oversee the computer systems in some departments. These ASPs contribute to student achievement through another unique type of academic support. The ASPs in the Tarbell College of Arts and Humanities not only culturally educate our students, but provide a great source of outreach to our surrounding community. In addition to our primary duties, we serve this campus and community through leadership roles in various organizations, both campus-wide and away from campus. We serve on many committees, such as the Campus Advising Network, the Council of Academic Affairs, the Financial Aid Appeals Committee, Enrollment Management, Department Curriculum Committees, and some of us are student organization advisors. And those are just some of the extras that we do. ASPs serve a vital role in the success of our students and deserve recognition and encouragement for filling their duties in a superior manner while participating in committee work and organizations, as well as promoting education by oftentimes taking classes themselves to enrich their personal and work lives. I think I've made it clear that I'm proud to be an ASP and I'm honored to be speaking for UPI today, but my interest in this campus is based on much more history than just my work experience here. Yes, I'm an ASP, but more importantly, I am EIU. I came to Eastern as a new freshman in 1982 and earned a teaching degree. Then later, I earned two master's degrees from this university. And one of those masters was earned while I was teaching in Mattoon, before I came back to work here as an advisor. But the second one was earned after I became an advisor here on campus. And due to the fact that I'm in a position that requires a master's degree, I've been rewarded for my achievements. Unfortunately, some of my fellow ASPs have not been allowed those same benefits due to an egregious glitch in our contract. Another perspective that I have is that I was a student worker and a graduate assistant on this campus. I've been in many, many facets of campus throughout the years. I've seen a lot of changes throughout the years, and I've met a lot of people, and I assure you that it's the people who make the difference around here. For instance, my all-time favorite instructor at EIU was a temporary faculty, the old term for our annually contracted faculty. She modeled good teaching in that she knew her subject and had a genuine interest in her students. And one day, she happened to note a little ability in me that I had not recognized in myself, and she asked if she could recommend me for a student worker position that she knew about in the Academic Advising Center. Little did she know that what a difference she made in my life with that one little push for me to utilize my skills. And I think an important aside that I need to mention here is that ACF went on to earn her doctorate and retired from here as a Unit A faculty member in the Lumpkin School of Business. But to finish my illustration, I got that job that she mentioned, and I had a front row view of what the academic advisors did on this campus and found that I wanted to pursue that career. So I went ahead and I finished my teaching degree, and as I was doing that, I ran into the Unit A professor that influenced me the most in college. And at that time, I really didn't think I liked him very much because I thought that he expected too much. But today I owe him that a lot because he's the one who really insisted that I push myself and think outside the box. I had to have more detailed answers than I'd ever had to before. And so when I was asked to speak today, I thought of that professor, and I figured if I survived him, I could survive this as well. I became a lifelong learner, and now I strive to promote the importance of education as a result of my experiences at Eastern. And isn't that what we want from our university today? My answer to that is yes, this I believe. I believe that to maintain the quality of this university, we need to work together to protect the greatest resource we have, the people. And that includes ASPs, ACFs, and tenure-track faculty, and above all, the students that we have here. Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Lynn-Ann Page, and like Laura, I've been both a student and an employee at EIU. I graduated with a BA here in 1996, left for my MFA, which I finished in 2001, and was back as an annually contracted faculty member in 2002. I returned to join the ranks of people I considered my heroes, the EIU teachers who nurtured my passion for learning. As an undergraduate, I experienced the kind of education for which EIU is distinguished. I attended innumerable one-on-one meetings with instructors with a genuine interest in my learning. Teachers agreed to participate in independent study courses so I could delve further into my studies. Advisors strove to help me create a meaningful, successful college career. Those 4 years not only broadened my understanding of various fields of study, but also taught me to analyze, to synthesize, and then how to examine my place in the world and its possibilities. Later, at another university, As a graduate student who attempted to teach almost 50 freshman students how to write while focusing on my own studies, I came to realize that my undergraduate experience here had been exceptional. I had always realized that my EIU instructors were dedicated to student learning. Indeed, they are some of the most dedicated teachers I've ever known. Their ability to nurture students, though, depended on many provisions here at Eastern I'd never thought about. Reasonable class sizes, practical course loads, sufficient preparation time, wages that were rationally and justly determined, benefits such as health insurance, job security, and a share in the decisions that affected them and the university as a whole. Many of these policies were negotiated between UPI and EIU administration. I want for my students all of the benefits I enjoyed here when I was a student. As an annually contracted faculty member in the English department, I teach only freshman-level courses, and every semester one of my sections takes place at 8 o'clock on Monday. I get to meet students as they walk into the first class period of their college careers, some nervous, a few maybe a little defensive, many eager, and nearly all seeming ready to burst at the seams with potential. I wonder how many of them will experience the Eastern I did, an opportunity to work with a teacher closely enough to see my sense of accomplishment and expansion reflected, an evolution, a stepping stone out of the hopelessness that haunted my mother as she worked a series of underpaid pink-collar jobs with no benefits, my father even as he completed his BA at 54 years old after almost a decade of part-time schooling, and my grandparents as they mined coal and worked as migrant farmers. I understand that the financial situation at every level of this state's infrastructure is dire. That's exactly why we need to build protections into a solid contract. Our students need us more than ever. Thank you for your time.
Hello. I'm Fern Corey, the last of the UPI EIU speakers. We've appreciated your patience and your attention to our stories about what EIU means to us and what we mean to EIU. I'm proud to stand with my Unit B colleagues. This stable and dedicated group is a huge part of what makes EIU work in a way that many of our peer institutions with contingent part-time faculty and revolving staff do not. Excuse me. I'm proud to represent my Unit A colleagues, many of whom I know are teaching or meeting with students right now, or the right now I imagined it would be when I wrote this, some of whom I know are traveling to conferences, and I can't help but be reminded the last time I was asked to represent my academic colleagues on this stage, where as faculty laureate, I spoke to students who were just beginning the journey that Laura and Lynanne have described. Unlike Laura and Lynanne, I did not attend EIU. I came to EIU in 1990 with an MA and PhD from the University of California at Santa Barbara. But I received my undergraduate degree and began an MA program at a regional state university. But here's the thing. At no point during my years as an undergraduate did I receive the kind of personal attention that Laura and Lynanne described. I entered an MA program not because anyone talked to me about my aptitudes and goals while I was an undergraduate, but because at the end of my BA program, I just didn't feel like I'd finished anything. I received no substantive mentoring or advising my first semester in that MA program. I signed up for 5 classes, because that's what I'd done as an undergraduate. I simply didn't know better. I left that program and entered the PhD program at Santa Barbara, only because the company my husband worked for relocated to Santa Barbara. I was so under-mentored that I didn't know that I should have applied at that time for a graduate assistantship. I figured that out, I was told about that mid-year when the graduate secretary at UCSB gave me a heads up, and really, what would any of us do without that kind of support staff? My professors at Cal State Fullerton were well qualified for their jobs. I learned a lot from them. But I cannot honestly say that I am here because of them, or that it ever occurred to me to see them as role models. I got through my undergraduate degree by following the advice given to me by an uncle. No one cares if you graduate except you. So you can imagine how much I appreciate the EIU difference.
the difference that is clearly appreciated by our students and alumni, the difference that was reflected in the praise for the individualized attention to student needs that came through in our last accreditation report. EIU students benefit from our personal attention, and though they don't always appreciate it at the time, from our nudging. I think of myself as sort of a herding dog, always like nipping at their heels, kind of pushing them to go just a little bit further, and then sort of going around the edges to make sure we still have everybody with us. I think our students also benefit from a modeling of a lifestyle in which teaching, research, and service are productively and mostly joyfully integrated. In that way, I'm a pretty typical member of Unit A. So, you know, what do the tenure-track faculty do? Last Friday, I gave a presentation at the Ambra Valley Film Festival. This week, I met with my classes. One of them, we met in the library, so I had the help of library faculty. I returned drafts of papers to one class that my students will be allowed to revise, because as Ann Fritz, the biologist on our negotiating team, said to me the other day, because ran into her, she was responding to drafts of two parts of a long-term research project, otherwise they won't learn. I was in and out of the Writing Center every day, supervising and mentoring the graduate students who work there. I've had individual meetings or exchanged emails with more than a dozen undergraduates and graduate students this week, students who want to borrow books, ask for a letter of recommendation, inquire about a writing award, talk about a project in progress, or about the personal and financial problems that are limiting their progress. I've been talking to my department chair about a summer course to serve the new reading certificate in the School of Education. Next semester, I'll be directing two independent studies in an MA exam, so I've been collaborating with graduate students on the petitions associated with those. I observed a colleague's class this week, and I learned a lot. I attended meetings of four department-level committees, the monthly meeting of enrollment management, and two protracted meetings related to negotiations. That doesn't count this one, which is half as many meetings as were attended by members of our negotiating team, which consists not of outside consultants, but of a chemist, a philosopher, a biologist, an advisor who teaches EIU foundations, and a teacher of writing, all of them juggling their responsibilities as team members with the responsibilities to their disciplines, their departments, and EIU students. Unlike Laura and Linnean, I feel no particular loyalty to my undergraduate institution because I did not have the personal connection and attention from my professors that I give my students. Like Linnean and Laura, like all of my UPI EIU colleagues, I do feel tremendous loyalty to EIU because the work we do here makes a difference in the lives of students. So it just kills me every time negotiations come around and I'm treated by the administration like I'm part of the problem, not part of the solution to the problems facing EIU. We're into our sixth month of negotiations and there's no end in sight. Why are we spending our time this way? It's not like we don't have better things to do. This is not a good time for us to be at odds. The future of EIU is at stake, and we all have a stake. We need to look at the big picture together, using all of our human resources, using our research skills, creativity, disciplinary expertise, and our experience collaborating with colleagues to solve real problems. The problems facing EIU are not problems that you can solve with management rights. Education is not a product, but a process. And there's nothing you can take from us or deny us at the table that is going to solve those problems. We need to come together to maintain quality and to retain students. To do that, we'll have to keep a firm grip on our core values: excellence, personal relationships, service, and opportunity. I don't see how management rights are going to help us achieve those goals. Frankly, it makes me angry every time I hear that phrase, and it's just about all we have heard during negotiations. The message behind the stories you've heard: excellence, personal relationships, service, and opportunity. It's just what we do. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Just a personal aside, I know that when I attended Eastern, I was served well by the faculty and staff.
and I'm sure that situation still exists today, so we appreciate your comments.
Make a motion for adjournment.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. Roll call.
Mr. Prattaville?
Yes.
Ms. Nimmons? Dr. Webb?
Yes.
Mr. Wiesing?
Yes.
Mr. Welch?
Yes.